Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the fifth canto, chapter 14, text 12, and it's prose, so we won't bother with the Sanskrit. We'll just read the translation and Srila Prabhupada's purport. Translation. Due to his pious activities in previous lives, the conditioned soul attains material facilities in this life. But when they are finished, he takes shelter of wealth and riches, which cannot help him in this or the next. Sorry, in this life or the next. Because of this, he approaches the living dead, who possess these things. Such people are compared to impure trees, creepers, and poisonous wells. So when I was reading this translation, it would enable me to just understand it a little bit more clearly. In my own mind anyway, I substituted for this phrase because of this with in other words. So I'll just read it again so we can have, everybody, maybe that'll help some other people too. Due to his pious activities in previous lives, the conditioned soul attains material facilities in this life. But when they are finished, he takes shelter of wealth and riches, which cannot help him in this life or the next. In other words, he approaches the living dead who possess these things. Such people are compared to impure trees, creepers, and poisonous wells. Notice when he finishes up his own wealth and opulence, which were he acquired due to his good karma, then he's approaching other people to get more from them. That's what's basically, and of course he's being mentioned that it won't help him in this life or the next. Anyway, this is Srila Prabhupada's purport. He says, the wealth and riches acquired through previous pious activities should not be used for sense gratification. Enjoying them for sense gratification is like enjoying the fruits of a poisonous tree. Such activities will not help the conditioned soul in any way, neither in this life nor the next. However, if one engages his possessions in the service of the Lord under the guidance of a proper spiritual master, he will attain happiness, both in this life and the next. Unless he does so, he eats a forbidden apple and thereby loses his paradise. Lord Sri Krishna therefore advises that one's possession should be given unto him, yat karoshi yadas nasi, yat jahosi dadasi yat, yat tapashyasi kuntaya, tat karushva madarpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, text 27. Material wealth and opulence attained through previous pious activities can be fully utilized for one's benefit in this life and the next if one is Krishna conscious. One should not try to possess more than he needs for the bare necessities. If one gets more than is needed, the surplus should be fully engaged in the Lord's service. That will make the conditioned soul, the world, and Krishna happy, and this is the aim of life. Om Aginatam Adandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Mulitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Govara Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the first point Srila Prabhupada addresses here in his purport is that the wealth and riches acquired through previous pious activities should not be misused for sense gratification. So the first thing that we could think about in regard to that is that this human form of life is very rarely achieved. It's explained in the Shastras that there's 8,400,000 species, and there's of those 400,000 are human-like species. And it's not every day that you get a human body. Prabhupada, it's very rare, actually. There's according to modern statistics, 9 billion, or anyways, between 6 and 9 billion, you'll find, depending upon where you look, human beings on the earth. But if you were to do a census of the other species, the population of the other species, far outnumbers the human beings. And there's a lot of living entities out there, and, it's actually we're a very small percentage of the total number of living entities, even on this earth planet, what to speak of throughout the universe. So it's very rare to get a human body. It's a very great benediction. Prabhupada says in one purport in the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's chapter 10, text 11, He says, in one first sentence in one of the paragraphs, he says, after many, many millions of, our consciousness is covered by the dust of materialism due to many, many millions of births in this material world. So as we've been kicking around in this material world for a really long time, and finally we have a human body, so we should take advantage of this opportunity. It's such very rare, and it's even more rare to get a human body in a situation where you're able to even address the issue of what is the meaning and purpose of life. You know, there's some people who have human bodies in some parts of the world. They're so overwhelmed by the circumstances, you know, they're not so conducive. You know, they're overwhelmed. They're just struggling for existence, to put it in plain, simple language. They're just struggling to, you know, stay alive from one day to the next and, you know, have food to eat and clothing to wear and shelter and like that. So they don't have a lot of time to think about, you know, what is the meaning and purpose of life? Is there a God? And, you know, et cetera, like that. It might, you know, flip through their mind in the course of their suffering, but, you know, it's mostly, they're just, as I said, just struggling to stay alive, to exist. So it's even rarer to have a human body in a situation where you can address those issues. And then what's even more rare is to have a human body where you can address those issues and have some facility at your disposal to do it. And it's like to take, you know, to be in a country like here, like in America, or some of the Western countries where, you know, we have things that we have the human body and we have the opportunity to think about the meaning and purpose of life, and we have facilities at our disposal, you know, things that we can actually use to engage in Krishna's service. That's even more rare. See? So to be in this type of position and not take advantage of it is a great, great misfortune. One analogy that came to my mind when I was thinking about this was, it's just like if you got a full scholarship to go to Harvard or Yale or something like that. Some young person got a full scholarship to go to Harvard or Yale. And then when he got there, all he did was, you know, just skip, cut classes and go to the movies and go to the pub and, you know, just mess around, get intoxicated, you know, with his friends and stuff like that and lose the scholarship and flunk out. What a horrible shame. That person who's doing that, obviously he wouldn't have been enjoying while he's doing it, because he would have been in the back of his mind or the front of his mind, he would have had, you know, known that he was doing the wrong thing. He'd be in total anxiety while he's doing it, and then of course he loses that scholarship and then he has nothing to show for it. Whereas on the other hand, if somebody has that sort of an opportunity and they're responsible, they apply themselves and they take advantage of it, then they'll have the satisfaction of knowing that, you know, they're making use of this great benediction they have. And they'll have something to show for it afterwards. They'll have a good career waiting for them, you know, in some particular occupation like that. So, that's, as I said, it's an analogy that, we have to be responsible. In this human form of life, Prabhupada would say it's a life of responsibility. And we have to, you know, understand what's going on here and act responsibly. Otherwise, we're going to really, not make use of an incredible opportunity, you know, an incredibly important opportunity. So Prabhupada makes the point here that referring to wealth and riches, he says, enjoying them for sense gratification is like enjoying the fruits of a poisonous tree. Such activities will not help the conditioned soul in any way, neither in this life nor the next. Well, the obvious there, if you enjoying the fruits of a poisonous tree, what happens if you try to enjoy the fruits of a poisonous tree? You die. So in other words, it's kind of like, it's like so much, it's like what we experience with sense gratification. It's initially, it's very, you know, it's pleasurable. It's like Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, happiness in the mode of passion. It's like nectar, and then it turns to poison. You know, it's this initially, there's some pleasure there, or some illusion of pleasure, but then just a little bit further down the road there, it shows its real face, and you're left with, you know, the cleaning up the mess. You know, you're left with the suffering that's involved as a result of having enjoyed that pleasure. So, no, it's not real pleasure at all. And then, But Prabhupada goes on to say that if the person engages his possessions in the service of the Lord under the guidance of a proper spiritual master, he will attain happiness both in this life and in the next. So, first thing is that in order to be able to do that, well, I'll just read one more sentence. Prabhupada says, material wealth and opulence attained through previous pious activities can be fully utilized for one's benefit in this life and the next if one is Krishna conscious. So it's sort of like elaborating upon the same point. You have, in the previous sentence, he said that one has to do it under the guidance of a proper spiritual master. And then he says here, you know, in order to be able to do that, one has to be Krishna conscious. So that's the first point, that in order to be able to use this wealth and opulence in devotional service, one has to be Krishna conscious. One has to have the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. You know, otherwise, you won't know what you're doing. You know, only a Krishna conscious person can actually, you know, properly utilize wealth and opulence. Other people, they just have some sentiment. They won't actually understand how to properly utilize it. And probably the first aspect of understanding how to properly utilize wealth and opulences is to understand that for ourselves, we don't require anything, almost. You know, we require very, very little. Prabhupada used to be, he coined the maxim, simple Christian, human life is meant for simple living and high thinking. Simple living, high thinking. And so that's the first thing we need to understand, that for ourselves we need very, very little. What is, as devotees, what do we really need? And you just need on one occasion Prabhupada said, a devotee, if he just gets a place to lie down, a little prasadam, some service, and then, you know, he's happy. You chant Hare Krishna and some service. You require practically nothing, you know, for ourselves. And but for, you know, of course, but for spreading the Krishna conscious movement, we can utilize so much. But anyway, on this point of that we require very little for ourselves, Prabhupada gave a lot of different instructions on that particular point. I found a very nice one in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila, Chapter 3. This was an excerpt from the Text 101, purport. Prabhupada says, this is referring to devotees, he says, we must always remember that a devotee's life is one of vairagya vidya, or renunciation and knowledge. Therefore, all devotees are warned not to live unnecessarily luxurious lives at the cost of others. Grihastas living within the jurisdiction of the temple must be especially careful not to imitate karmis by acquiring opulent clothing, food, and conveyances. Just in case, just backing up a little bit to live unnecessarily luxurious lives at the cost of others. So somebody, you might think, well, I'm not living it at the cost of others. You are. If you're a devotee, and you've got a lot of, you know, if you have opulence, and you're using it for your own sense gratification, that's living at the cost of others, because that money is given to us by Krishna to be used to spread the Krishna conscious movement. So if we're using it for our own sense gratification, then we're depriving, you know, by not using it to spread the Krishna conscious movement, there's so many people that are missing out that, you know, perhaps could have been reached with a book or something, you know, or prasadam, or, see, because we use that same facility for our own sense gratification. So you are living a life at the cost of others, enjoying that life at the cost of others by not using whatever wealth or opulence you have in Krishna's service. Okay, continuing on with the purport, he says here, Grihastas living within the jurisdiction of the temple must be especially careful, not to imitate karmis by acquiring opulent clothing, food, and conveyances. As far as possible, this should be avoided. A member of the temple, whether Grihasta, Brahmachari, or Sannyasi, must practice a life of renunciation, following in the footsteps of Haridas Thakur and the six Goswamis. Otherwise, because Maya is very strong, at any time one may become a victim of Maya and fall down from spiritual life. So that's a very powerful instruction from Srila Prabhupada. And that's, once again, that was Anchalila, Chapter 3, Text 101. So the second point is, or the next point Prabhupada makes here in the purport, is that the surplus money must be engaged in Krishna consciousness. So, and he does mention that one has to do that under the guidance of the, you know, proper spiritual master. And on that note also, even if we don't have any, like, money, you know, that's certainly what's being referred to as wealth and opulence, but even time, you know, energy, that's all an opulence. Anything you have should be engaged in Krishna's service. And if you can't figure out how to do it on your own, as Prabhupada pointed, it should be, you know, you just get some guidance, consult somebody, you know, talk to a senior devotee, your temple president, your spiritual master, and find out how to do that. I'm just elaborating now. We've got a bunch of points here. They're all related to this purport, but I couldn't kind of figure out exactly how to get them in a nice, logical, sequential order here. So I'm just going to present them. They're all relevant, and you'll be able to appreciate them, I'm sure. On this point of living simply, sometimes we think that, you know, when we hear this instruction, we might think that, oh, yeah, this is nice, you know, about how we should all engage our wealth in Krishna's service, and that's nice. But it's not like, you know, if you don't do it, it's not so bad because, I mean, it's not like breaking a regulative principle. You know, it's not like if you engage in illicit sex or if you take intoxication, that's really bad. But if you have some wealth and you don't engage it in Krishna's service, okay, well, that's not so good, but it's not so bad. It's not like, as I said, it's not like breaking a regulative principle. But that kind of thinking is faulty because it's dangerous. It actually, the reason is because the scriptures tell us that this accumulation of, you know, material wealth, not using any Krishna service, is a cause of fall down. Right in the beginning, in the nectar of instruction, is that verse, Atyahara Prayasascha Prajalpa Niyamagraha, that Atyahara is referred to overeating and over-collecting. And Prabhupada makes that point right in that purport that, you know, if too much collecting is also a cause of fall down. And the very next thing, Atyahara Prayasascha, and it's also, it leads on to, it's a cause of unnecessary endeavor. See, in other words, if you allow this mentality to develop, fester within your mind, within your consciousness, then you'll find that you're in a position where you're working hard to acquire things that you don't need, then you're working hard to maintain those things which you don't need, and then when you finally, if you're fortunate enough, you smarten up and you realize I don't need these things, then you got to work hard to get rid of them. It's not easy to get rid of your things even. You know, when you realize, oh my God, I've accumulated too many things, I got to get rid of stuff, and then it's another job again. It's another big endeavor to just figure out how to sell them, give them away, or whatever. So you really, it's really not a good idea to allow yourself to, you know, develop this mentality. I'll tell you a very humorous, extreme example of this. Somebody showed me this the other day on the internet. There was this a lady. She was living in Boston, and she was a she accumulated stuff. It started off, she said she was a collector, but then she realized after she was living in this one house for 40 years, and she realized she was a hoarder. And there was a video, and the title of the video was Too Much Stuff. And it interviewed her. And, you know, it was amazing because when she was talking, you would think that she was like a normal lady. Well, she was. She was a normal lady. I mean, she was 70 years old. She looked normal. She spoke like a normal, you know, a sane, intelligent person, but she was describing what her, you know, what her activities, and simultaneously was showing her house. Anyway, what happened was this: from the time she was about 30 years old, she's just started anything she liked, she'd keep it, you know, and showed her house. She had, like, the house was so full of stuff, she couldn't even open the door. She couldn't even open the front door fully, you know. She had to kind of open it a bit and squeeze in there. And then the person who was doing the video squeezed in behind her. And then they took her, and then she took the person for a tour, and they're showing this lady had so much stuff in there. It came to a point where she had to get a membership at the YWCA so she could take a shower. Because her bathroom, the bathtub and the shower was full of stuff. She couldn't shower in her own place. She couldn't eat. She admitted, I love to cook. I really love to cook. But her kitchen sink was full of stuff, you know. She realized she had a problem. This is taking it to the extreme, but And it showed it. You know, she basically had to almost move out of her own, and even her bed. She said, I could just about get in my bed, you know, because she had stuff. So she basically almost had to move out of her own home. So in those, the idea is things are supposed to serve the person. It's not like the person is supposed to serve the things. And that's what had happened in her life. She'd become a servant of things rather than things are supposed to, you know, serve you or are supposed to assist you in your attempt to serve Krishna. So, you know, you can get it can go to that extreme, you know, so you have to be very careful. Even as devotees, we have to be very careful because there's a real tendency to get super attached to something as soon as you have it. That's why they say in management, I don't think this is a Prabhupada quote, but I've had devotees tell me this, that it's harder to spend money intelligently than it is to make it. You see? A lot of people can make money, you know, are intelligent about how to make money, but what's even harder than that is to spend it intelligently. Because why? Because there's a tendency as soon as you get money to want to keep it. You get attached to it and you just want to hang on to it. You see? So to be a good manager, to spend it intelligently is even harder. It's even harder. So, so we have to be very careful about that tendency. You know, Prabhupada actually knocks it on the head, you know, practically right I think it's in the introduction of the Nectar of Devotion. Maybe it's in that little pamphlet, Reservoir of Pleasure. He explains that, you know, with the essence of the whole thing is, with the nitty-gritty, is that we, as living entities, we have a loving propensity. We have a loving propensity. We're going to love something. We're supposed to be loving Krishna. And if you're not loving Krishna, you're going to love something else. You see? And it could be things. You know, there's plenty of people who are loving things. Because why? Because things, sometimes they're very faithful. They serve you very nicely. They don't talk back. They don't complain, you know, like that. So people do fall in love with things. I've experienced that even, you know. You develop sentimental attachments. I sold this car to Sukadeva. I had this car for 12 years, something like that. And it was before that, it was my father's car, and I always liked it. And I remember, you know, the day before I sold it to Sukadeva, I drove it to the airport to check it out and everything like that. And I parked it in Lot C, and I got out, and I was just, you know, getting ready to go out to go to the terminal. And I looked at it, and it wasn't like I was doing it on purpose. I looked at the car, and I thought, okay, car, this is it. This is it. I think it's finally going to, you know, it's bye-bye. You know, we're going to part company here. And, you know, it's like I had to control myself to keep from crying practically. And it's like, yeah. It was a very nostalgic moment, you know. And I was remembering all the different things we did together, you know. And really. And how I gave it to this relative and it came back. And I gave it to that relative and it came back. I gave it to, like, my uncle. It came back. I gave it to Suryamukhi's husband, Govinda, came back. I gave it to Mahapunya. You know, I tried to give it to different people. It kept coming back. So I felt like, you know, this car, we got some special ras, you know, we got some special relationship here, you know. How could I part with this car? But, I was thinking about different times when it broke down, and I thought, oh, that's okay. You know, you didn't do it on purpose. You know, it's... So here it was, and I realized, yeah, you got to be really, really make this effort to place our loving propensity, try to learn how to love Krishna. Because if we don't, we're going to love something else. You know, just on that point of this, I saw another video once. I can't remember how I stumbled upon it. Somebody showed it to me about this lady who had 87 cats. I think Mahapunya, my wife's son, showed it to me. He showed me this video. This lady had 87 cats. The same sort of situation. This lady was practically catted out of her house. She had so many cats, she practically couldn't live in her own house. She just kept acquiring these little, you know, these pet cats. So, you know, it goes on and on and on. You can love anything, practically. The idea is to learn how to love Krishna. And we have to understand that if we don't learn how to love Krishna, we're going to love something else. But the result is not going to be good. It's not going to be very palatable. That's the point, you see? Only loving Krishna is actually going to enable us to have the, you know, the real yayatma supersedity, the happiness and satisfaction that we're looking for in life. So anyway, going on here. I don't have the time. On the point of it's just really a significant thing, and we have to be serious about this because, you know, in that prayer, Lord Chaitanya In the Shashastaka, he says, Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam ba jagadisha kame. He says, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor to desire beautiful women, nor to have any number of followers. So he's basically in that statement, he's summarizing what are the attachments, what are the material attachments. You know, they are wealth, women, and followers. See, so in other words, it's one of the biggies. And we shouldn't think of it as like, Archana. Oh, yeah. Covey, too. That's there, too. So another one of the biggies. Put it up there. It's another something we have to be really watch out for. But wealth is one of them. So we have to watch out for that because it is one of the, you know, the main material attachments. Well, wealth. Excuse me. I'm just thinking about how Jaguarunga after the class is going to get on my case for doing my little push-ups here. But okay. And Prabhupada, you know, different places says different things about this point. One place in the Bhagavad Gita, he describes how, I think there's that, it's in the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, he goes, money, money, sweeter than honey. And Prabhupada describes in the purport how people risk their lives to get money. One lecture I heard just recently, Prabhupada was explaining how it's he explained what is the psychology underlying this motivation to always acquire wealth. And Prabhupada, on that occasion, he stated when he was a student, he studied economy. And he remembered being taught Marshall's Economics. One of the things they had to study was a book by this guy Marshall. And this man's theory was that family affection was the basis of economic development. And he said that... he was taught that there was this company, and if they hired somebody, if they were considering somebody to give them a job, they would want to know, is this person married or is this person single? You see, and if the person was single, they weren't so inclined to give him the job because they knew that he has nothing really binding him. You know, he could give up the job at any moment because, you know, it's just him. But if he's got a family, if he's got a wife and children, then he's going to be serious about his work because he's going to want to keep his job and he's going to want to, you know, prove his position and like that. So that's one of the things behind this, the motivations why we, you know, so attached to wealth. So that means, you know, for grihasthas, that's even should be a wake up, you know, something that our ears should perk up on because, you know, we have families and so that we might have that even more of an inclination to, you know, acquire wealth and like that. Now, here's another very interesting point. What is the proper way? You know, we talked the generalities so far, but what is the, do we have any specific guidelines how to utilize wealth? And the answer to that question is yes. And probably one of those that we, you know, first come in contact with, at least that I did, was given in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, because that was the first Krishna conscious book I read cover to cover, teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And in that book, Srila Prabhupada explained, he described the example that was given to us by Srila Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Actually, I believe it was Sanatana Goswami, how he distributed his wealth. When he decided to give up his government position, it was Rupa Goswami? Okay, Rupa Goswami. Yes, Sanatana Goswami got away first. And then Rupa Goswami was to join him. And so he left the service of Nawab Hussein Shah, and he had a lot of money. You know, he'd earned a lot of money as a minister. So what he decided to do is he gave 50% to the Brahmins, to qualified Brahmins, to use in the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. 25% he gave to the family. And 25% he kept against personal emergency. Okay? And Prabhupada says in more than one place, and teaches Lord Chaitanya and various other places, he said, this is the ideal, you know, maximum, you know, this expression of mercy and the ideal example of how to utilize one's wealth. 50% towards Krishna consciousness, 25% for the family members, and 25% you can keep for personal emergencies and like that. So that's there. And Raghunath Das Goswami, of course, he showed another excellent example of how wealth can be utilized in Krishna's service when he did that festival at Panihati on the request of Lord Nityananda. And also he was initially, when he first moved to Jagannath Puri, he was using his money to feed all the the Brahmins, sannyasis, Krishna conscious people like that. And but then of course as his renunciation evolved, he eventually even gave that up and went on to not utilizing it like that. one can please, and the last point Prabhupada makes in the purport is that if we use our wealth in Krishna's service, Prabhupada says that will make the conditioned soul happy, the world happy, and Krishna happy. Well, you know, it's like a win-win-win type of thing. And there are examples of that. Some within our own experience, three examples that came to my mind when I was thinking about this of, you know, people who properly, favorably use their wealth in Krishna's service were one, Jayananda. Jayananda, Prabhu was, everybody knows one of the very early disciples of Srila Prabhupada. We observe his disappearance day every year. And he was working as a taxi cab driver before he became a devotee, and I think also for a while he was a devotee. Anyway, at one point he gave $5,000 to Prabhupada for printing, I believe it was the Krishna book, or one of the early publications, and Prabhupada was very pleased by that, and he acknowledged him in the preface of the book. Also, another devotee who's been very exemplary in utilizing his wealth in Krishna's services, Ambarish Das. He purchased, I believe, the Hawaii temple, the Detroit temple, and now he's, you know, going to be, he's earmarking millions of dollars for building the temple, the Abhuta Mandir in Mayapur. So he's another example of how to use wealth nicely in Krishna's service. George Harrison, Prabhupada was very pleased with George Harrison when he donated $19,000 for the printing of, I think it was the Krishna book. And, of course, he donated that entire estate on the outskirts of London, which is like the European world headquarters now. Very beautiful, you know, property. So Prabhupada was very pleased by these, personalities when they did like that. And, historically speaking, within our tradition, there are some various devotees who've utilized their wealth nicely in Krishna's service. Shivananda Sen was one of the Grihastha disciples of Lord Chaitanya. He had a little bit of extra money. He used his wealth for helping the devotees get from Mayapur to Jagannathpur every year. And as he was the one who made all the travel arrangements for the devotees, he arranged for their accommodation and their food and like that. He bore the expense of that. And that was a service he did as a Grihastha. And Lord Chaitanya was very pleased with him for doing that. He was one of the very favorite devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya personally named his son. Right. Perhaps the most famous example of somebody who became successful by engaging their wealth and opulence in Krishna's service is Bali Maharaj. Classic example and the favorite example. And I'll try to very briefly kind of, you know, give the story behind that. I can't see, actually. Can you? What time is it? Okay. So Bali Maharaj was... He was a king of the demons, you know, and the demons and the demigods are always fighting. So in one of these battles, Bali Maharaj was killed. He was brought back to life by his spiritual master, Sukracharya. As a result, he was very grateful. He worshipped Sukracharya, and Sukracharya gave him some benediction. And also the descendants of Bhrigu, they liked the way he was worshipping his spiritual master. They also engaged him in the Vishvajit Jagya, some sacrifice you performed to become, you can't be defeated by your enemies. And also he got some benediction from his grandfather, Pallad Maharaj. So then he decided, okay, I'm going to give it another go. Let's attack these demigods again. So he assembled his army and he, you know, went to the outskirts of the heavenly, you know, where Indra's abode is. And Indra saw, he was astounded, you know, there's that picture in the Bhagavatam where Indra seeing the forces of Bali Maharaj and being like astounded. So he went to his spiritual master, who was Brihaspati, and he asked him what he should do. And Brihaspati said, well, you don't try to fight him because it's too powerful. You're going to lose. And he explained to him that he had benedictions from Sukracharya and so forth and so on. He gave him the background information. So he said, well, what do we do? And he said, well, make yourselves invisible and worship Lord Vishnu to, you know, try to get some help from Lord Vishnu, because that's the only way you're going to be able to, you know, to deal with Bali Maharaj. He's so powerful now. So they did that. So they just made themselves, the demigods, like, basically fled. They left. They abandoned. They evacuated the Amaravati. And they just, you know, went for the hills, so to speak. And, tried to follow that instruction by Brihaspati. And in the meantime, their mother, the mother of the demigods, is Aditi. She's a wife of Kashyapa Muni. She was very, morose about this because... You know, that's her sons after all. You know, it's the same thing. Motherly affection is there even in the heavenly kingdom, just like here on earth, same you know, no difference. So she was lamenting and lamenting, and finally her husband, Kasyapa Muni, he was off in meditation, you know, for a long, long time. Finally, at one point, he came back and he saw his wife so unhappy and lamenting and morose. And he said, well, what's wrong? And she explained what had happened to him, you know. And she said, you know, I want to see my sons reinstated in their, you know, proper position like that. So at first he tried to instruct her in self-realization. Basically, he did like Narada Muni did to Dhruva Maharaj and tried to just say, look, you know, just let's get a spiritual perspective on this and see if this is in the right. She didn't buy it. She didn't buy into that. She couldn't like get past that fact that she was, you know, aggrieved at what was in the material position of her sons. So finally, Kasyapa Muni agreed to instruct her in an austerity called Payavrata, which was taught to him by Lord Brahma. It's a way of worshipping Lord Vishnu to give fulfillment of desires. So she did that for 12 days, and she did it properly. And sure enough, what happened was Lord Vishnu appeared before her, and they both her and her husband, and he offered a benediction. He was pleased with her worship. And the benediction they asked for was that, okay, you become our son and, you know, help protect the demigods. So anyway, so he agreed. And then later, you know, Lord Vishnu appeared as Vamana. And, you know, and he, so at one point when he grew up a little bit, he eventually he went to the sacrificial arena of Bali. And, you know, he was disguised as an ordinary, like a dwarf Brahmin, but still, all those personalities were present. They could understand that this was no ordinary personality who was coming. So they all stood up, and Balimraj could also appreciate that here's some extraordinary Brahmin. I don't know, you know, he didn't know that he was Vishnu at that point, but he could understand here's some extraordinary personality. So he also stood up and offered respects, and he said, okay, thank you for coming. You're obviously such a wonderful little Brahmin. Let me offer you some benediction. So Balimraj goes, yeah, it's okay. So he said, no, please, what do you want? Well, you know, I'm the king. I'm the emperor of the entire, you know, heavenly kingdom here. Well, what would you like? He said, well, if you really want to give me something, I'll take, you know, just give me 3 steps of land. And Balimraj says, what? 3 steps? I'm offering you a benediction. You're asking for 3 steps? He said, yeah, that'll be fine. Just give me 3 steps of land. So he goes, okay. Meantime, his Balimraj's spiritual master, Sukracharya, was observing all this. And, you know, he got caught off guard like everybody else. He was just like, you know, so impressed by the effulgence of this personality. And, you know, but then he figured out, he was very intelligent. He figured out this little interaction was going on between Bali Maharaj and Vamanadeva, you know, he figured out what was going on. But unfortunately, you know, Bali Maharaj had already made the promise, but then he called him over to the side and he said, hey, you know, he explained to me, he said, hey, look, that's Vishnu. You made a mistake. He's gonna with these 3. That's no ordinary dwarf Brahmin. That's Vishnu. He's gonna take everything you got. He said, but then Balimraj says, well, like, I made a promise. You know, I promised. And he said, it's okay. He said there are certain situations when a promise is not binding. And he said, and this is one of them. So just go back there and say something or other and get out of this, you know. So then Balimraj went off. You know, he got after he talked and went back and he thought about it. And he just reviewed the whole thing in his head, and he thought, nah, you know what? I'm not comfortable with that. I always thought the idea was you're supposed to surrender to Vishnu, and you know. So anyway, he just went over all the things in his head, you know, and he weighed out the pros and cons, and he decided, no, I ain't going to do that. I'm going to keep my promise. I made a promise. I'm going to keep it. So said, okay. So go ahead and take your steps, you know. So everybody knows the story. Vamanadeva, with the first step, he covered the entire. Three plant the earth? Oh, lower. Yeah, and then the second step, he did the rest of the universe and actually kicked a hole in the coverings. So that's how we get the Ganges coming through there. And then, so with 2 steps, he took everything. He took the entire universe. And then he said, well, you know, you offered me 3 steps. You can't fulfill your promise because with 2 steps, I've taken everything you had. So Balimraj says, well, okay, you know, I got nothing, but I'll offer you my head. Here, you can. Anyway, so he basically gave everything. He gave everything he had plus his own self. And Vamanadeva was pleased by his charity. And he agreed in reciprocation. He'd always be with him, and he's actually, he returned the heavenly kingdom back to Indra and the demigods. He was given an abode in the planet Sutala, and Vamanadeva is there as his doorman. You know, that's the relationship that he actually purchased Krishna by his charity. Anyway, Prabhupada spoke about this in a lecture he gave in Hawaii in 1976, and I'll just read you a little something what Prabhupada said. In the first part of the lecture, Prabhupada gives an instruction about this point of how we should use our wealth in Krishna's service. He says, "Don't keep with you anything. Then you will make plan. Let me have illicit sex. Let me have intoxication. As soon as you have got money, immediately you spend it for Krishna. Tyagena, charity. Not that you starve. You keep yourself fit to execute Krishna consciousness, but don't keep much money. Immediately give in charity to Krishna." So that's the instruction Prabhupada gave. And in describing the pastime, Prabhupada said, "So Bali Maharaj understood what kind of beggar he is. Now," and he said, "now you have purchased," this is Vamanadeva speaking to Balaraj, "now you have purchased me by your charity. I shall remain your doorkeeper." So then Prabhupada's conclusion is, so if you make charity to Krishna, you can purchase. Although Krishna is all-powerful proprietor, you can purchase Krishna. So do that. If you have got any money, spend for Krishna consciousness. So that was the classic example, Bali Maharaj. So anybody have any questions or comments? Archita Babu, yeah.
Well, before we give the floor to those here, let's give it to the internet first. We have 45 Vaishnavas watching. There's somebody named Brenda Lee who asked a question, and it's getting everybody else is giving her answers, but she wants your answer. She says, based on what you were talking about, she said, "What is the proper attitude to have towards our dear pets so we don't become too attached?" And then as a corollary, she says, "I love my dog, but I don't want to come back as one."
Well, feed him, prasadam. What else? I don't know. It's not something I've thought a lot about. I mean, I don't. How do you engage? I mean, if you could possibly engage him in Krishna's service somehow, try that. But don't get more of him. I don't know. Somebody help me out here. I arch it over my head. It's not something.
Well, as usual, Prabhupada set the standard. When Prabhupada was in the San Francisco area in the early days, one girl had a dog, and the dog would always come with her to see Prabhupada. Whenever they went for walks, the dog would be there. And the other devotees were a little bit upset, you know, the more staunch devotees, you know, what was this dog? So one day, Prabhupada didn't see the dog, and he asked, he said, "Where's the dog?" And the other devotee said, "Oh, that girl is so attached to the dog." He said, "Dog is also a person." No, they said, "She's attached to that dog. She treats him like a person." And Prabhupada said, "Dog is also a person." So that's the one hand. But on the other hand, Prabhupada went to see Mukunda Maharaj when he was still living with his girlfriend before he became, you know, a full-time devotee. And they had some cats. So when Prabhupada went there, he kind of played with the cat a little bit. And then he was waiting to talk to Mukunda. Mukunda Maharaj said he was very encouraged to see that Prabhupada was not disturbed by the cat. And then another time the cat tried to get up and Prabhupada just shoved it away like that. So Prabhupada showed both sides. You should treat animals like they're persons because they are. But on the other hand, don't be so sentimental and so attached to them that they become your life and soul and you run the risk of becoming a dog at the end of your life.
Yep, that's good. Parameshwar Prabhu.
They did a survey and they found that grandparents spend more money on their pets than their grandchildren.
Yeah, so once again, we have to be careful because, as I said, there's a tendency to become really attached to these non-Krishna conscious things, and it won't help us in our Krishna consciousness. It's make it more difficult.
Yes, you mentioned how we shouldn't have opulent food, clothing, and conveyances. So what would you consider opulent food, clothing, and conveyances?
Well, my answer to that would be let your conscience be your guide. Let your conscience be your guide. The instructions there, and I think all devotees are capable of understanding that. And what's considered opulent for one person would be considered really simple for another person. So, just take the principle and meditate on it, and try to put it. All of us have to do it. Me too. You know, we all have to do it. We have to try to put this into practice in our life. We have to, Prabhupada said, the life of a devotee, especially a devotee living within the jurisdiction of the temple, is supposed to be vairagya vidya. So you know, we have to always be meditate on that and try to be living simply and thinking highly. And, you know, each one of us has to endeavor to put that into practice in our life, just like we endeavor to, you know, do so many different things. It's just one more thing. You got to always be constantly trying to make that effort. Like, keep it simple, you know, and try to give it all to Krishna. Nothing for me, everything for Krishna. And everybody has to try to do that. That's the best answer I could give for that. I mean, this might be, well, that's my answer. There could be better answers and more complete archetypal.
Hare Krishna. So now the place where Prabhupada set the example. He said, sense gratification is like salt. Everybody's need is different. Because sometimes there's, you know, still partly envious conditioned souls. We want to make everything equal. If somebody's got a lot and I don't have enough, why doesn't he give to me? For instance, I was talking to Ambarish once. We, you know, were kind of associating in Mayapur, and he was telling me that. He said that devotees from all over the world are constantly bombarding him with requests. You know, I live in Russia, and my family's poor, and this and that. Can't you send me some money? And he said, that's not my goal here. He said, the money that I've acquired, I've promised Prabhupada to use to push on his mission. So he, you know, he dedicated $10 million to Mayapur. Prabhupada also told him to build a planetarium, so he had that always in the back. He wants to do big projects with his money, not necessarily look around the world and see which devotee, you know, needs more diapers. And this, that's not his business. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we're a little bit envious and we want to level the playing field. If I don't have, or nobody should have more than I have, so whatever other devotees have, they should give to everybody else. And that's not our business. So we should be satisfied. That's another hallmark of a Brahmana. Be satisfied in your position. Don't look around and try to get others' position to be like yours. Be satisfied in your position. Because there will always be, even when Lord Chaitanya was here, some devotees were wealthy. Some were ordinary, some were very poor, like Kaulabha Sridhar. Yeah. But who did he give his attention to? All of them. He gave attention to Kaulabha Sridhar, who was completely poor. He gave attention to the wealthy ones, like Murari Gupta. He gave attention to all of them. Not that everybody has to be poor and then I'll give you my attention. No. So the Lord doesn't insist on that, but we kind of insist on that. Why should some devotees have more than others? That's not our business.
Just on that point, now something came to me about food. You asked specifically about food, Rabindranath. There is a purport in the fourth canto where Prabhupada says the menu should be rice, dal, chapati, sabji. And then, you know, he said something like to the effect, why should the menu be increased? And so, as far as Prabhupada was concerned, that was appropriate prasadam for devotees, rice, dal, chapati, sabji. It's like in the fourth canto, you know, about in those pastimes about Dhruva Maharaj. So that was, as far as Prabhupada was concerned, an adequate and a good diet for devotees, rice, dal, chapati, sabji. Yeah. Somebody else wanted to say something?
I liked very much what you were saying about having clutter in your home, because I find if I'm able to release things and get them out of my life, then I'm so much more inspired to clean my apartment. But when there's so many little things here and there, how can you work around all that, you know? And so, yeah, I think not having accumulating a lot of things is almost non-different from being clean, you know? We can't be clean when we have all that. And the mind is also not very clean when all that clutter is kind of like, you know, physical attachments that are actually, you know, hovering in the mind all the time, too. So, and I just want to tell a really short story, but there used to be this little old lady, and she actually wasn't that little. She was an old lady, and she would ride around her bike around the block around here, real slow. Some devotees might remember her. Ganesh might remember her. She had gray hair. She's about 78, 80 years old, and she lived in an apartment right over here. And I used to walk around all the time chanting japa, and this was in the 80s. And she invited me into her apartment. And she said, I want you to see my Gornita deities. I got them from the devotees when Prabhupada was here on the planet. And she evidently had seen Prabhupada. So I thought, okay, she's an unusual lady, but I wanted to accommodate her, be nice to her. So I went in her apartment, and it was as if somebody had dumped a dumpster. I mean, the trash was up the walls like 5 feet, 4 or 5 feet. It was just everywhere. And Sunday feast plates, just the works, you know. And it was so filthy. I was just shocked, you know. And then in the back, sure enough, in the back bedroom, in this little box, she had these little Gornita deities. And I just about felt like crying. It was shocking. Anyway, but I just want to mention how the cleanliness is a really important thing that you can't have if we have stuff all over the place. Jared has changed so much since we got rid of so many things in there.
Anyway, there's so many more things that could be said, but we're out of time. So, Grantaro Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. You know, I just look.